It is Thursday, June 17, 2021. Today we discuss revisiting skills in the data space. I am Michael Askins, architect and technologist, and this is the Technology Architecture Solution Engineering Show. In the virtual studio, we have the much-awaited, long-overdue, returning champion, partner of the show, Chris. How you doing?
Doing great, man. It's been a while.
It has.
Glad to be back and glad to get back on track here.
Yeah, for sure. And I've been absent here a little bit too, between, you know, some stuff going on in life and actually Dev, remember Dev? He was on some of our shows with us. We have an episode of the Dev experience. He kind of took the helm there for while I was out for a little bit.
I saw that he did a pretty good job, actually. I caught the episode and I thought he did a really good job of kind of keeping everything together and keeping things in line. So
yeah.
You better be careful. He might be coming up on your heels.
Oh, I'm looking over my shoulder and I can feel his breath on my neck, man. He's anxious. Yeah. he did a wonderful job. It was a good show. We have some other shows that we kind of have queued in between that we kind of ad hoc'd when, you know, we kind of mishmashed in here or there. So our release schedule has been less than more regular. But, you know, leading into the summertime, we tend to see that instead of just taking a long block off and saying, hey, you know, personal stuff or people out on vacation, guests are not available. You know, we're just going to smatter it in here or there. And then we're going to get back on our regular, hopefully a regular schedule. With the data download and collaboration corner for that matter. So, you know, I was going to put a little tech news in, you know, I was going to bring something up about Windows 11 and all this other stuff that's buzzing around out there, but, you know, let's shelve that off to the side and kind of work on the topic at hand of like revisiting skills in the data space or, you know, even a broader concept of like, how do you get here from there? You know, on one of my other shows that I have, it's about, you know, building IT professionals, about building better business people. And this topic transcends both of these shows because this will be a little bit of more of a technical journey. Whereas on the other show, we tend to like talk more conceptual. We do deep dive, but here with you, knowing that you are a, you know, cloud specialist, data architect, you know, you can put a lot of labels on all your achievements throughout time. And it's not as easy as sitting on a learn.microsoft.com or a plural site and going and getting a stamp on your head and saying, I am this now. There's a lot more to it. So kind of wanted to walk through what your personal journey looked like and maybe see how that might map into, say, others that are out there. So we'll pause and clarify titles and roles if needed. You know, there's a difference between an architect and an engineer and a designer and you know, continue on with all the various buzzwords and HR titles that are out there. And let's focus it in on how do I get here from there? How do I want to be, you know, what do I need to know to be in the data space to whatever level I feel comfortable or want to achieve from a career perspective? So let's kick that off first, if you're okay with that, because I know in the pregame you mentioned something that got in the back of my head. How did you get from there to where you're at?
Sure, yeah. And, you know, I think to preface this a little bit, we talked a bit about a YouTube video that I had put together around, you know, what it takes to be a solution architect. And, you know, I talk about sort of the core principles of being a solution architect in there. And it's, you know, just kind of a quick hit, right? It's for those who are exploring different opportunities and different careers and things like that. And so it's not meant to be the Bible by any means, right? And it's meant to get you started and sort of wrapping your head around it. And it just so happens that I was going through some comments on the various channels, and one of the folks had asked me, you know, for in the comments, just kind of a list of things. And, you know, when you talk about that type of career move, it's hard to put together a tangible list because, you know, do I need to improve my communication skills, my written communication skills, my oral communication skills, my networking abilities, you know, to meet with the folks that, you know, I need to have some mind share with, or is it the pure technical skills, right? One of the things that I do point out is that I am less concerned about getting the certification, and I'm more concerned with studying for the certification, you know, working toward it. Now, granted, being a Microsoft employee and, you know, my own technical skills initiatives and learning requirements, I have to stay certified. I have to stay up to date on this stuff. I just recently, within the last probably month, I just recertified on my, you know, data engineering certificate. I have my AI engineer certificate that I have to renew, you know, and to be able to prove that I'm staying current with the technology, which of course I do my best to.
Yeah, it's important. It's important for Microsoft employees and partners as well. Like we have goals and competencies in order to sure. maintain certain levels, so Microsoft feels comfortable coming to like in this case, you know, our day job aspiring sure. for them to come here and say, I want a gold partner in cloud platform who's going to be able to transform me and stand up my, you know, SQL or stand up my infrastructure. We need to sure. have continuous improvement.
Absolutely. And you know, there's investments on both sides. There's investments on the Microsoft side as well as the partner side. I never saw it more than at our previous employer when we were working with some education customers, you know, yeah. one in particular in the New Haven, Connecticut area, where, you know, we were working on some data solutions, you know, big picture reporting solutions, BI solutions, things like that. And there was this overwhelming need to get validation from Microsoft that we were along the right lines, we're going in the right direction from an architectural and technical standpoint. And what we overwhelmingly tried to relay to the customer and even the Microsoft team that we were working with at the time was that we're a little different than maybe some of your legacy database, you know, providers or vendors, you know, some of the big ones out there that I don't need to name by name. One might start with an O possibly. And, you know, they've got a big firm hold in the education space. And really, they do it all themselves, right? They've got their own solution architects. They've got their own engineers that come in and help out. They're doing the bulk of that implementation and guidance and architecting. Whereas Microsoft, on the other hand, we have those teams, we have those people, but we rely heavily on that partner network. And oftentimes, the partners have more of an opportunity to get that experience and that hands-on than, say, myself or our cloud solution architects. The certification experience is a heck of a lot different than the real-world experience. Yep. So, you know, I do a fair amount of mentoring for folks. They ask me for guidance. How do you get where you are? You know, how do I get to that level? And oftentimes it's, you have to get hands-on. You have to get experience. You have to understand what real-world problems are, because a test is only going to take you so far. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, whether it's building your aunt's boutique dog grooming shop's website, or, you know, online registration portal, or, you know, going and doing an internship if you're 30 years old, or, you know, those types of experiences, you know, building your own blog site. I've got a teammate who had no experience in Azure, came in, built his own, you know, fully running e-commerce site, essentially, in the Azure platform, just to teach himself all the components of it, you know, whether they be infrastructure or data or application development stuff. And it was just, it's having that ability to go and build a practical application for a real world solution, because the test is only going to get you so far.
Yeah, so the test yeah. materials and the questions and the thing, it'll set you up to pass the test.
Right.
But the true test is can you sit across the table? Like if you're in the enterprise space, sit across the table from, you know, the people who are going to approve funding and show them the confidence that the solution will solve the need. Right. Will you be able to, you know, articulate to your team or actually execute the build for something and say, okay, here's something that is line of business for my business. And if it's not right, there's problems because people aren't right. working. You know, that's the true test. The test right. and certification that you get, I feel, gives you the opportunity to prove out the real test.
Absolutely. It gives you the basis, right? Yep. It gives you that baseline to get started. And so that's why I say I'm not as concerned with whether or not you pass that exam, right? Now, granted, your boss may. I know my boss does, because she gets a notification if I don't, right? You know, within a certain time period. But, you know, from a pure technical acumen standpoint, I think the proof is really in the pudding about putting the work in getting that certification. That's really the bigger test. What I would say, you know, just kind of backing things up is, you know, I often say I grew up in IT, right? And so right out of high school. I had an internship while I was going for my associate's degree, where, you know, I was help desk, right? And I started out right there at help desk. You know, this was the late 90s, when technology and computers and personal computers and the internet were just really starting to turn, right? I think 96 is commonly the year that people say, where the internet really, really turned the corner and started becoming much more predominant in our everyday lives, right? So I can remember, whether it be upgrading my own PCs or working in the business where they just bought, you know, 50 new Dell computers that were not a sponsor, that were, that were, you know, 486 DX2s or possibly Pentium 75s, possibly. I don't remember where we were at that point, but I mean, we're talking about 8 megs of RAM, right?
DX266s with the turbo button off. Yeah, it was 33.
Turbo button on these, but yes, I remember those very well. Never understood why you wouldn't use turbo, but definitely came across those. And anyway, so, you know, I mean, that gave me a foundation, and the technical part was great. But beyond that, it was the people part, because you couldn't sit in a room and just fix computers all day. You always had to interact with people. And I wasn't always probably the best people person. You know, I can remember some snarky responses to certain people where I probably didn't make the most friends, you know. and you know, all these things we learn, right, throughout our careers. But I will say that gave me a good foundation for not only the technical side to really understand, and I was going for my degree and all that too, but the degree is only going to get you so far. It you know, goes back to the certification aspect of things. It's all about the journey. It's not about the end result, if you will. Yeah. But, you know, from there, kind of getting into, you know, my first real tech job, getting into working for a local PC shop and spinning up a business services practice out of that and doing some consulting and helping to build out that business. I was getting that double schooling, right? It was the technical aspects, but it was also the communication and business aspects that, you know, really, really led to more of my success, because there's such a high requirement for being able to communicate well to be successful, you know. And I think IT folks and engineers get a bad rap because of their lack of communication skills. And so, you know, that's one of the first things that I highlight in as part of the video is you need to have really good communication skills if you're going to be in some kind of a customer facing role. You know, I've got some colleagues that are brilliant technically, but, you know, maybe not as strong on the communication side. And so, you know, it really, not only does it make your customers a little, you know, on pins and needles because they're not exactly sure if you're communicating the best way, but, you know, from a customer service perspective, you know, and courtesy the other side of the table is helping to guide those people to help with their own communication skills, you know? And so respectfully, I jump in at times to say, hey, you know what, let's phrase that a little different way, you know, so that it's clear to everybody what we're trying to relay to the customer. And so, you know, that was a big thing. And, you know, that was true of college. That was true of, you know, my various degrees, eventually getting my MBA and being able to work as a team and being able to communicate. I was never afraid of communicating, public speaking, those kinds of things. I always fashioned myself to be pretty comfortable in front of a crowd of people. Not everybody can say that, right? Some people really just do not like it. But it's exhausting for me too, right? So that's the interesting thing is that, you know, I'm more tired from a one-day design session with a customer in person, and just your brain is always on and you're constantly communicating in ways that, you know, help the customer understand what you're trying to do, than I am when I did my 150 mile bike ride, you know, a few years back, right? 10 hours on a bike. It was pretty exhausting, you can imagine, but,
oh, yeah.
But your brain is dead from all of that whiteboarding and question and answer. And, you know, you're not going to have every answer, right? That's one of the things that really people need to understand is you're never going to have all the answers. You know, I feel bad for the person who thinks they always have all the answers, because it's a myth, right? And really, we're good at certain things, and you know, obviously focus on those things that we're good at. But work on the items when you're not as good that are required for your job, you know? And so, whether it's, you know, this one's silly, but it's your penmanship on a whiteboard, right? My standard handwriting is terrible, you know, and you know, typically if I'm going to write something by hand, I'm going to write it in script because my script is actually better than my standard handwriting. But if I'm going to put something on a whiteboard, I typically write in block letters to make sure that it's clear, you know, and you know, my whiteboards that I do for, you know, my YouTube videos, I'll do the same thing because that's the best way for me to communicate. And I've accepted that about myself. And I think that's the biggest thing is know what your strengths and weaknesses are. You know, so growing up in IT, as I put it, there were a lot of those kind of hurdles I had to get over and understand what I was good and not as good at. Now, being able to rise through the ranks and reach the rank of CTO, you know, less than 10 years into my career, and then CIO at several companies after the fact, that had a lot to do with my own self-positioning, right? So you have to be able to display what those strengths and weaknesses are. And I think that my communication skills and my ability to bring my own agenda forward was a critical thing for me, as well as being able to get valuable quick wins in the department, right? Get rid of that low-hanging fruit that is on display to everybody, right? So we've got these massive projects, and the reality is by taking those projects on, if you can get quick wins, to get momentum, to build trust, and then you get more buy-in, it just earns you more time, right? It earns you more capability to keep the project going, keep those fundings going, stuff like that.
Yeah, for sure. And there's a couple things that you touched on that I kind of want to emphasize. So like, you know, the top of the hour or top of the show, we're like, okay, what are the skills to get in the data space? And, you know, I kind of started, well, as we were talking, like you said, you know, about your, how to be a solution architect, I started formulating a lot of those things, and I pulled from some conversations I had on my other channel, and I listed out mentally a lot of the skills to get there.
Sure.
And the emphasis was not technical.
Right.
And you're hitting all those. I didn't want to precede that. I didn't want to share that. I want your I didn't want you to play. And you, it lines right up because communication skills is number one. Confidence is another one too.
Absolutely.
You know, and how
confidence in being correct though.
Correct.
Right. Right. Not confidence in the wrong answer. What I have found is that customers appreciate you saying, "I don't know the answer, but I'll get you the answer."
Exactly. Right?
As opposed to saying something that is not correct, and then they lose confidence in you over that time.
For sure, for sure. And the other thing that you get respect with your positioning and try to get to that, I say this term, the person who spits fire, you know, the person who's up there in front of the whiteboard or in front of the crowd, who's like, who can like think quick, think ahead. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying think quick and like, here's a joke, but bump, like think quick on like, okay, here's a situation and how does it apply? Being able to index and, you know, I guess go to your mind palace and pull out whatever's in there and make it make sense on the fly. That's spit and fire, right? Sure. And in order to do that, you know, it requires a certain way of thinking, a certain way of retaining and pulling from your experiences and having the confidence and swagger, but not arrogance to be able to like have that come across, right?
Right.
It to relate to your audience in the terms in which they understand. And that is not just from a, like what I do for a living and what you do for a living. That goes back, like if I were to run my career too, there's points where like being a consultant, being someone working for a services firm where you're trying to talk to people who aren't us, right?
Right.
And the biggest complaint, I mean, we see it from the SNL skits all the way through, is like the IT person and like Acronymville and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
It's true to a point, but if you want to like be that person who accelerates through your career and is able to relate and converse with business units, or if you're a consultant with your clients, or if you're, you know, at a C level, DC or V level, you need to have that understanding that not everyone understands what you do. And that you need to know how to relate to them. And it, a lot of those softer skills are some of those things that are missing. And that's what makes someone stand out. And if you stand out and you can technically succeed, you're on the right path, right?
Sure. Yeah. And it's funny. I will say, in addition to being able to be quick on your feet and spit that fire, being able to tell a joke at the whiteboard goes a long way too, right?
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
It keeps the room awake. It keeps people on their feet because, I mean, let's be honest, right? We start to drone on after a while when we start going through technical concepts. And if the audience in the room isn't fully engaged and really, really deeply into it, you're going to lose them. You're going to lose them, and there's going to be, you know, it's not going to be successful. So, you know, if it means telling a joke to keep people awake, then, you know, that's a great skill to have. And it goes a long way.
For sure. But we're going to take a quick break here in a second. But before we go there, I'm going to toss to you just something to think about while we're on the break. So, you know, when you're presenting and having some of these I'm calling them soft skills. They're not soft skills. They're just skills you need to have, right? Sure. So think of the last several decks that you've presented from a presentation perspective, and think of the slide count, and then think of how many slides you actually stopped and paused on. So on that note, we're going to pause here for a word from our sponsor. We'll be back here. Yeah, I know. we'll be back here in just a moment. We'll see you on the other side.
Hey, listeners. So by now, you know that while we bring you the latest and greatest tech news, tips, and trends by night, by day, we run the Microsoft Cloud Solutions practice within Aspirant Consulting. Aspirant is a global management and technology consulting firm that challenges the antiquated, ineffective consulting model. Unlike the bigger firms, we focus on delivering sustainable results for our clients through broad, integrated expertise. From operational process design to organizational change to app development and pretty much anything you can imagine in the cloud, our team can help yours overcome whatever challenge it's facing. So check us out at aspirant.com. Follow us on LinkedIn, or follow the link in the show notes to learn more about Aspirant and our breadth of capabilities. Aspirant Consulting. Experienced teams. Real results.
And we're back. So I kind of left you there, you know, season cliffhanger there. You know. Average out, how many slides were in that deck? And then really, how many were important?
Well, so what's interesting, right, is a couple things come to mind. So I recently, within the last 6 months here, got the honor of becoming an EDC speaker. And I think I might have mentioned that before. I don't remember. But, you know, our enterprise briefing center, which means I'm the face for the customer. And truthfully, my goal in a presentation is to not get through all the slides, right? I still go by the old rule of thumb. It's one slide per minute. You know, and it still serves me pretty well when I'm building out a deck and I'm building out my outline and stuff like that. But I consider it successful if I don't get through my deck, because if I do, that means that I had way less engagement than I would like to have, you know? And so what I would say is that, my hit rate is probably 50-50. You know, I unfortunately, we're in a virtual world right now, although it's starting to go away, unfortunately. But you know, when you're doing online stuff, there's a disconnect there. You don't get as much interaction from the group. You've got folks that are maybe a little more shy. They don't want to, you know, they don't want to be on camera. They don't want to, you know, they don't want to interrupt your flow and stuff like that. Whereas in person, I give off a bit of an air of approachability where people are feel more comfortable to be able to just jump in and argue with me, right? I welcome it. You know, respectfully disagree with me and tell me your point of view. I'm fine with that, because what I find with that is we get sort of a multiple perspective conversation, you know, and generally we're able to land on something where we can mutually agree on an approach, you know. And it brings me back to, I can remember a design session I had with a customer years ago, and we were sitting there, and you know, we're kind of going through Kemble methodology for data warehousing, right? And so when we talk about skills, it's a skill to understand those different methodologies, right? Because it's not a physical implementation thing. It's a methodology. It's a design thing. It's an architecture thing. And, you know, we were looking at the merits of Kimball versus Inman versus Dataverse. And, you know, my point to the gentleman I was discussing with was that, in my opinion, the Kimball was the best methodology for providing business value the fastest, because you take it in more of an agile approach. You're delivering at a business unit or a focus area at a time, and building that up over time across the entire business. And his point was, well, but you get a better complete picture, you know, using the Dataverse methodology. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, not Dataverse, Data Vault. I'm using the wrong term, Data Vault methodology. And I could see his point, and I said, yeah, but if it takes you 3 years to get there and your company is not vested in that commitment and in that investment, then you're going to lose it. You're never going to finish that project, you know? And we came to a point where he could understand that. And I could look at his boss, who was sitting in the room and watching us go back and forth, kind of with a smile on his face, and say, you know, it's your choice. What is more important to you? Do you have that buy-in for this 18-month project or however long it was? You know, and knowing the pros and cons is critically important. We didn't talk about our you know, slowly changing dimension type twos in that discussion, right? We talked about the methodology that was going to provide value to the business the fastest. And so, you know, the technical conversation is something that you work out along the way. But when you're making these decisions, I'm very much of the opinion that you can provide the most business value the quickest. And that comes down to my presentations, right? To answer your question is, if I don't get through that entire deck, I feel as though I've provided the most value to the folks that are in the room.
Yeah, for sure. So I've been subscribed to a different theory recently. I follow the minute a slide to just try to estimate it out. And you know, as partners, we get resources from Microsoft and, you know, some of our other service provider partners. And you look at the scroll wheel just keeps going and going. And I understand, right? Less is more. Engaging with, you know, imagery, all of those presentation building skills, not delivering skills, is something I think everyone, this is one of the things I had listed, is like skills in the data space. If anything, being able to put a presentation together so that you can relay to the business or whatever is critical, super critical. Being able to document and be able to write and write what was done, put it in your system of record. That is a technical and a business skill that you must have. In the soft side of it is how do we deliver that?
Sure.
And I've come to the theory of I try to limit of importance. Sometimes you have to put more slides in there. You obviously do. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I try to limit it to 7 slides max. If within, because I do the 25 minute, 45, 50 minute meetings now.
Okay.
Sure. If I have roughly 5 to 7 slides, and each one is a main area of focus, we're going to have really detailed, engaged conversation around each one of those areas, right? Mm-hmm. And there is some philosophies around that out there. I'm sure I'll see if I can find some links. I know there's some people talking about building smaller decks and, you know, visual storytelling and all those kind of wrappers. Those things are out there. But I found, because you can get analytics in your presentations now. That's the great thing, right?
Yes.
And what made me spur this movement on is like, how do I become a good person in the data space or the cloud space is to relay concise information to people in relatable ways. And if I have a bazillion slides and I have a bazillion buzzwords and I have a bazillion, bazillion's not a real word, but you know, for effect, if I have this numerous amounts of things that are out there, am I really getting my message across? What is going to be the takeaway from everything that they visually and audibly heard from me? So I try to scope it to that. Now that presents a really challenge when you do consulting, because like everyone knows who Microsoft is. Maybe we have a customer who's not as familiar with like the day job in this case, my case, Aspirant. So we have the few dexes like who's Aspirant? There's three pages there. Then who am I? And then what do we do? So like, it's important that we get that information across. So, so is there an effective way that maybe before we have this conversation, we share who we are so that leading into it, the expectation of who you're talking to, and this is even internally, if you're in a large 1,000+ company and maybe you're working on a data migration project and you're bringing stakeholders from different business people over, you know, share in advance, who's there, who's speaking, what the intent is. And then you can just like, okay, everybody's coming with expectations, right? So I've been under the realm of let's scope back here and let's and try to make it try to make the time meaningful. Not saying that going through each slide isn't meaningful. It's just when you're scoped to a specific topic and it's not broad, it's easier to just like let's boil it down and let's get to it. Let's roll the sleeves up, you know.
Sure.
I've been taking that approach whenever I can. Now that being said, and not to be a hypocrite, I'm sure there's some people listening. I did a presentation this week that was like 40 some slides. You know, you do what you got to do.
Yeah, no, and I think the situation also dictates what you need to accomplish, right? As a public speaker, as somebody who does, I don't know, I probably do 25 talks a year at various venues and you know, platforms. And when you provide fewer slides in a physical setting, you're building your own brand because you're providing information that you cannot get from the slide deck after the fact.
Yep.
And so I think it leads to your own ability to be in demand, to own the room and to really get your point across. In some of the virtual things, you know, you're being recorded, so that's going to be there forever. And you maybe want to provide the slides so that the consumers have the ability to go in and grab links from the slides, you know, grab resources that they can go back to. And, you know, I've started to try to, from my own, you know, speaking career and, you know, being able to relate with customers, I've started to take a bit more of an approach toward what you're speaking of is that, you know, what can I speak to that I can't go and read on, you know, the Microsoft documentation site, right? Yep. What can I speak to that helps people to relate to my experience and the things that I see on a day-to-day basis that they don't see in the documentation, right? It makes me think of my latest video on knowledge mining. It's, you know, a 12-minute video, and I'm trying to incorporate why we might use a knowledge mining solution, you know, and I use four different industry examples in there. I talked through the pervasiveness of AI and where it's helping us that maybe not everybody's thinking about, right? The folks that are in technology that are doing this as part of the day job, they probably get it. They probably understand that that spell check is an ML solution, right? Mm-hmm. A machine learning solution. Does their CEO? Most likely not, unless they're in high tech, right? And so, you know, it's how do you differentiate yourself? And, you know, speaking to sort of our topic, that's a skill, is the ability to differentiate yourself against the folks that you're going to be competing against for, you know, your next consulting gig, you know, your solution architect gig, whatever, right?
Your promotion in the enterprise, you want to move up to that next level, right?
Yeah.
So, So here's a little, not that we, I do this kind of a thing on my other channel, but I'm just, OCD is going to make me say this here. So presentations, please everyone kind of latch onto this theory. So if, as we start going back to work, and if you are either a consultant, solution architect, or even enterprise, and you're delivering a presentation, and you're talking, right, you're standing up there in front of your peers, your coworkers, your bosses, and you're trying to relay information across, and you've tried to take the example of like, I'm going to write real nice, concise slides. Do yourself a favor. When you want somebody to look at the slide on the screen, put something up there, stand off to the side and speak to it. But then when you want to be heard in your message, which is not up on that slide, it's the value that you're bringing. And this is not a skill, but something that people underestimate. What they have is the value you bring is the knowledge you have and how you interpret it and relate it. That move. Step towards the people, engage them. If you ever look at really good speakers who are like, you know, maybe at Build or in the days when we used to go in person, they're going to be there. They're going to be at the podium. They're going to be doing their thing. You're looking up there, maybe a demo, but what's the next thing they do? They want your attention. You right. want your audience's attention. Move towards them because their eyes will naturally go to you. Likewise, if you want somebody to retain a graphic that shows what you're doing with the data in all the different areas that you have it, and you're up there fidgeting, bouncing all over the place, they're not retaining your message. So right. getting that presentation skills down is important. And there's tons of tips and places you can sure. go for that sort of sure. thing. But yeah. I can't emphasize enough that if you're looking to transform yourself into, someone who's an executor to someone who's, you know, a designer, a planner, an engager, you need to start incorporating these things in your world.
Yeah. Yeah. And I actually have another video. One of my oldest ones is on just tips to being a better speaker, and that goes quite a ways back. But, a couple things to highlight, you know, what you mentioned there, right? Move closer to the audience. Change the tone of your voice, change the volume of your voice, change the speed of your voice to make an emphatic point, right? Work with the people, engage the audience, get them to answer questions, get them to raise their hands, right? There's a bunch of stuff, like you said, out there to keep people interested, but we communicate with others, and I think we've used this stat before, but 55% of all effective communication is in body language. Yep. What people hear and what they see on the screen is a drastic departure from what your body is doing and the excitement that you show or the misery that you show. one of the biggest laughs and the best engagement I used to get was when I was doing a talk and we'd talk about file shares in Windows and how everybody hates file shares, right? And so, because everybody can commiserate that works in IT, they're a pain in the butt to use. Now we've moved past that with OneDrive and stuff like that. I mean, it's just so much better, but the point is still there. And if you can help relate to the audience, that takes you a long way.
Yeah, and file shares, unfortunately, are still there too. We're dealing with that all the time, as well as sure. public folders in Exchange. So we hit on a lot of things here so far. You know, we touched on some soft skills. Presentation is huge, right? And how to engage, because that's the next level. Because anyone can really, I shouldn't say this, a lot of people in our world, if you're technically apt and you're already in this space, or at least getting established in this space, you can sit through and retain and regurgitate technical information. You can need to be able to present it. You need to write it, work on your communication skills. And, you know, one of the other things that, you know, I'm going to rewind a little bit and maybe pivot to some of the technical things that we need to do. You had mentioned, and I say this all the time too, and I enable my team members to try to get lab space or whatever to bone up their skills. Like we mentioned, have confidence in your messaging. And the best way to do that is not just to book learn it, but to actually do it, right? So, what I like to say is practice and believe in what you're doing. Don't just do it because that's what the step-by-step tells you to do, because you can just execute a step-by-step any day. A lot of the customers that hit, consulting companies up or Microsoft partners up to do work, it could go readily to docs.microsoft and find a step-by-step on how to accomplish it. That doesn't mean it's going to be successful, right?
Right.
So, you know, lab space is super important, right? And getting resources on how to actually execute the lab is super important. There's a big asterisk I always put in my head. And this goes back to when I was many years ago, when I got the Intelligent Edge Architecture stamp on my head, when I went out to Redmond for whatever, however week or so it is to do that. It's all of these things that we're talking about occurred there. You had to come up with architectures. You had to figure it out technically. Then you had to build with a team member what that looks like. They throw some kinks in the plans. Then you had to deliver it to someone. And if you were one of the tables that was like, hey, this is a great solution, you had to deliver it to a larger audience and a larger it was a great experience.
Yeah, 100%.
The challenge, though, here's the challenge. Specifically in the data space, it's not cheap sometimes to practice, or the resources to do certain things are not as readily available. So it's not like you're going to, if you want to be a Synapse guy, right? It's not like you're just going to go stand up Synapse and go to town. So how do you,
I might slightly disagree with that.
Well,
keep going.
Okay. I'm sure they have those labs. All
right. keep going.
That's where I'm heading. But where do people want to get access to those Mongo systems, those big things, so that they can have the confidence and the touch and the feel around that without having to have that nervousness of messing up a production system or a production deployment?
Sure. Yeah. You know, so there are actually some very specific places, right? So, and it kind of depends on whether you're enterprise or you're personal that you're looking at some of these things. One of the little known facts that I found out recently is people don't realize with an MSDN subscription. So if you've got an MSDN license that, you know, you're named through your organization, you get free Azure, whether it's $50, whether it's $200, it's somewhere in that range through your organization, depending on the level, you get free Azure. We have free Azure for startups for under $1 million. You get free Visual Studio, and you get, you know, you got to go sign up for some stuff, and you know, you can get some free Azure usage by way of that as well. But at the same time, there are also a lot of these services that you can run very, very cheaply in Azure or on premises. So I think of things like the Cosmos DB emulator, the Cognitive Services Docker containers that you can run in your own environment. Now, these aren't going to cost you anything to run, right? You can run them on-prem for doing your development, doing your testing. And then when you go to production, they're going to cost you something, right? Looking at something like Synapse, if you run a 100 DWC environment in Synapse, you are paying cents a day. It's not expensive. Okay. Now, are you going to be able to do a trillion row demo of Power BI attaching to Synapse? You know, probably not, because it's going to take till the cows come home to run that job.
Yep.
But you can still get the experience very, very inexpensively. And the reality is, you're going to have to invest something. You're investing your time, and you're investing probably a small amount of money. Now, if you're investing that money, I would say the vast majority of employers are going to reimburse you for that investment. Now, are they going to invest you hundreds and thousands of dollars a month? Probably not. Are they going to reimburse you for $50 a month? I would say it's reasonably safe to think so, but you can check with your manager, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of managers like the fact that you're willing to put that time in, right? They like the fact that you're taking the initiative and saying, hey, I want to learn something new on my own time. And really, I attribute that a lot to how I'm at Microsoft now, right? Getting back to where my track led to, is that I started doing some of some of the training through Pragmatic Works back in 2014, and I did it on my own. I got it reimbursed by my employer, but you know, SSIS, SSAS, SSRS, and then just SQL, you know, DB stuff, you know, DBA things, tips and tricks, that kind of stuff. And by doing a few of those courses, We're talking, when you buy their video recordings, you know, that the course already happened or something, we're talking about a couple hundred bucks, but hours and hours of content, right? That was just one example. There's a ton of free stuff out there on YouTube. YouTube wasn't as prevalent back then, right? And so by going through those motions and getting that experience, it went a long way. Not only that, but you start to network and make connections in these courses. And that's sort of what led me to the next step of doing some of the speaking, where I dipped my toe in the water and I did a SQL Saturday on SSRS. It was my first ever speaking thing. 55 people showed up. It was my first ever experience in front of a bunch of technical people that I did not know. I was nervous as hell. And the reality was, I practiced that demo 100 times over. You talked about getting the experience and practicing on the tutorials. It's the same thing with speaking skills. I've got two girls, they're 8 and 10. And when they want to do something, I say, okay, you may not be good at it right now, but if you practice, you'll get better. And and my 10-year-old just recently corrected me, and she said, you know what, Dada? Practice does not make perfect. Practice just makes you better, because perfect is rarely achievable.
And I was darn, just like,
kid,
wow.
You're reading too many of my books, kid.
That's fantastic mentality there, man. You're right path in that one. So I know a few people that have, there's my notifications, as usual, right on time, right in the middle of the show. So, I know quite a few people who have like their own tenants and they do a lot of their stuff themselves, and sometimes they reimburse, you know, if they can. So a lot of the MSDN credits, you know, you have to back that with a credit card. And I know a particular person, we both know a particular person, they will remain nameless right now. It's not myself. But they essentially forgot about an Azure firewall for a couple months. And those, depending on how they're configured, not necessarily the cheapest thing on the block,
sure,
right?
Sure,
cheaper than the competitors, but still, it's not one of those things, right, that you want to do. So there are resources out there. There are options for some free stuff. And again, depending on your classification of organization, if you're a nonprofit, if you're, you know, what your level of spend is with Microsoft in your agreement, you might get some of these things, MSDN. There's a lot of those resources for you to get out there and get exposure to it. The caveat to that is I would like to say that the first thing you should want to learn how to do inside of Azure, if you're going to plan on deploying a lot of these things, is understand cost control, right?
Right.
It's so not related to data, but it's often used in the business world. And this is one of the skills that I noted down from a technical perspective that will help you in your development world, and it'll also help you with your business world. So if you have a $200 credit, learn how to go into Azure and create a Azure budget. Right. Learn how to create an alert that when you're getting to certain levels, because you won't have that uncomfortable conversation that you designed this system or you deployed this thing that is costing our company a bazillion dollars. Again, not a real word. So saving your own credit card plus saving your business's expenses in a production world, that's something that's often missed when it talks about having skills, because you can get up there and you can have an understanding of, you know, data warehouse or, you know, Synapse. You can be a genius at this.
Right.
But understand the ramifications from the business side is what security. That's another skill that should be at least understood. Right. Networking, which we've worked at consulting companies that, you know, data people sometimes don't understand networking and endpoints. Right.
Yes.
And then the third one is, you know, understanding cost control. So there's some of those skills. I think that if you start learning those a little earlier on, you'll be a better technologist in general, but you'll also be able to really get your hands around data. And data is something that can sprawl, right? That can bite you in the rear end from a cost perspective, depending on what you're doing and how you're doing stuff. I mean, just think if you're a doctor's office or if you're in life sciences and you're asked to figure out, you know, how to handle data, and there's iterations of data, and maybe it's large data sets. And did you pick the right place for that? And how is it being used? And what's the cost? And what does that look like? Having that understanding is huge, I think.
Yeah. And you know, again, to build on that just a little bit, something to keep in mind is that if you point out those budgets and share with a friend so they know, right? So that, you know, they're not going to go overspend. Even you're going to get shut off at your limit with Visual Studio, with your MSDN. You're going to get hit with a, you know, whatever. You've got a $200 credit a month. You're going to get shut off. It's going to shut you down when you hit that limit. But one thing that people don't understand, and I actually just literally had this conversation with a customer last week who was frustrated that we didn't have an ability to shut down a subscription if it ran over a certain cost. And the thing that you have to keep in mind around this, and again, it's an opportunity to educate somebody around you, is the reason that every cloud vendor, not just Microsoft, every cloud vendor will allow you to spend unfettered and to no end is because if they shut off a production workload and you lose business as a result, they are then liable in a court of law, right? They have unknowingly taken you down and now you need to scramble to come back online. And customers need to understand that this isn't a way for us to make more money. It's simply a way to make sure that we are not taking somebody down unexpectedly and that we're not costing their business an interruption or disruption.
Absolutely. We have engagements for the day job around that very piece because organizations want to have things like that. Mm-hmm. So we have in, you know, some of our Azure Vision projects where we try to, like, you know, help people through the cloud. We tend to see this not just because this is the data download or digital download. It's a thing, man. People say, like, this thing, this is your cap spend. So we put in some of the automation things to shut services down that are sure. not needed, so we can make sure that we are spending properly, we're being wise. And again, it's often missed. You know, we don't want to have to come in as a partner or an organization, a consulting organization, to come in to put controls in because the perception is that you went wild. We would rather come in and educate you in advance of that to say, here's how you can put up guardrails. Here's things you can do that if you notice something's going to be out of bounds, but it's legitimate, you can keep these things rolling down the line. So wrapping those automation bits in, wrapping those controls in, providing that visibility, it goes beyond. And I'm sure there's hardcore data people right now might be rolling their eyes like, I just want to stand up my manage instance. But there's ramifications from the, you have the hard conversations. If you haven't had them yet, you will have them soon with finance or some V-level person be like, why are we in the cloud? This is too costly. But it's not really. There's things you can do to be more efficient. And if you have you don't have to know how to do it, but you have to be able to recognize it and understand it and maybe pull the right people in to do that.
Right, right. And going back to one of the most important skills that we have not mentioned that I think you know, people really need to know as we somewhat come close to time here is patience, actually. And it's mm-hmm. probably one of the most important ones you need. You know, I started speaking at SQL Saturdays in 2014. You know, I started working in SQL Server in 2008. It took me from 2014 to 2019 to land a job at Microsoft, to have the social presence, to have the wherewithal, to have the presentation capabilities and the technical skills and the communication skills and all of the things that we've talked about today to get there. So that was a lot of talks. That was a lot of learning. That was building a couple of data warehouses from scratch and understanding some of the nuances and some of the real challenges behind it. And it took a lot of patience. And truthfully, I didn't know where I was going at that point. I didn't know that this was a goal. And now being where I am, I wouldn't turn back. I mean, the opportunities that I'm afforded working for Microsoft, it's just a fantastic company, great benefits, great people to work with, you know, and I've been very, very fortunate to have great customers too. But you got to have the patience because it can be a long, long haul to get there. And, sure. and a lot of it's timing as well.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely timing. And, you know, looking back at my life, there was a few opportunities, well, more than a few that I've had to potentially, you know, join up with, you know, Microsoft. And I've taken the approach, I don't want to sound hyperbolic here, but like go into the motherland, if you will, right? You know, so like I've lived on the partner side for so long, and I figured it out. Well, as much as you can figure it out, it is still a little bit of enigma in certain pockets here. It's almost like when you like that cookie from that bakery, do you want to work at the bakery? And, you know, I say yes, but to me, that would be just like drinking from a fountain. I'd be like, give me more. I need to learn, because I just have this insatiable need to understand.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
And that was one of my things is like, never lose the, to be good, not just in data here. This is across all of technology, I feel, is never lose that urge to want to learn and understand, not just know how to do. The understanding part is the part, knowing how to do, you'll have a wonderful life and career. Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah. And it's not for everybody, right? It's a very big organization, right? And there are certainly, you know, you still have your politics and things like that. Those aren't completely gone. But it's all about what your goals are and what you want to achieve, right? So now I've gotten here. And I've got, you know, plans from 10 years from now, and I'm starting to build toward that because I know it's going to take a while to get there. You know, and so just, you know, keep those things in mind, right? It's all of those skills in one, and really the desire to want to be able to do it too.
Yep, absolutely. So I think that's a good note to end on. You agree with that? I think that's a good note.
Yeah. No, this is great. Great discussion. Love your perspective. I know you've had, you know, similar paths, and you know, it's good to be able to kind of you know, work alongside someone that you know has the same perspective, you know, and has gone through a lot of the same things. So it's good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. We appreciate you coming on. We're going to get back in our regular cadence here now. Looks like, you know, things are settling down, so we'll go back into our regular cadence. Thank you to the listeners. Thank you to Aspirant for sponsoring. Look down in the show notes for any kind of relevant links. We'll try to maybe aggregate some stuff. Normally we have a product here or there we try to include in there. We'll put some links to, you know, maybe some resources out there for you to definitely your YouTube link. We'll definitely get that one out there. So
great.
So thank you again. I appreciate it. And we'll see you on the next time.
Yeah. Sounds great. Thanks again. We'll talk soon.
Sounds good. Bye. Right.
Bye.
Today's show is brought to you by Aspirant. You aspire, together we achieve. This production is for information and entertainment purposes only. Not all technologies and items discussed are compatible with your system or specific configuration. Your mileage may vary. Consult a professional before trying anything discussed on this show. Visit show notes for relevant information and links.